Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And folks, it is now or never. And I just think that the tyrants and the despots that are out there that are exercising all of these unconstitutional powers are giving us all the marketing to grow this movement and to help everybody come on board with, you know, standing up for your liberties. I mean, I truly believe that there are even Democrats out there that have, you know, that are still voting Democrat because they just don't know. They just don't care about anything. Again, if it is not directly affecting your life, most people will just continue living within their own little bubble. And so they have no idea what the heck's going on. And this is, I'm just going to plug this again. This is why my Monday shows I am laying out as the Game Changer special episode series, how we are being attacked and how they are waging a broad spectrum warfare against us in the final phases of their taking full control. So anyway, we have Paul on board. I'm not going to go through the other obligatories because, you know, we tend to dive into these sidebar conversations and so forth. And so, Paul, welcome back. And actually, before we get back, I wanted to talk about the difficulty of reading this stuff. But before we even do that, any saved rounds, any comments, anything that you want to, you know, bring up for what we've covered so far? Because we kind of just went, you know, ducktailed and kind of just ended the show real quick because we ran out of time. Before we jump into content, though, Paul, hold on a quick second. I know, folks, that there's, you know, all these issues, these grapefruits, I call them, these spotlight issues like Trump's indictment and all of these things, you know, are constantly looming to get, you know, people, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to address this? When we cover content, we want to focus on the content. So I'm going to cover all of this stuff tomorrow on Feedback Friday. So let's get to this. So go ahead.
Enumerated and jurisdiction? Yes, we did.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to share, because we talked about this, but I hadn't shared this with the audience. So folks, when you read this, and I'm just going to highlight one particular line, and it's in blue in the yellow highlight. So if you're here at this point, you're already reading at this point in the document. There's this one sentence. And this is just one of the many sentences that you can read that you go, what the heck? How is this, you know, proper language or English or what have you? And I'm just going to read the sentence. It says, regulations under this head are necessary, but the convention could form no one that would have suited each of the United States. That's actually what is written here. And so I was pointing out to Paul that the word no one should probably have been could form not one, not could form no one. And regulations under this head or regulations under this paradigm, the way they spoke back then, it is kind of difficult. And so when you're reading this, you go, well, shoot, that didn't even make sense to me, and I'm reading it. So right. This is difficult stuff, but as I point out to everybody, you know, if you can read the Bible, because that's very difficult to read, if you can read the Bible, then you should be able to read this as well. It may be difficult, and you may come across something, but you know, don't let it hold you up. But my point is that this may be a typo, a simple T missing in the word not, and then it all of a sudden comes to, you know, make a little more sense. Anyway,
you know, the other thing I told you earlier, GR, is I'm glad that I read the Bible early because I learned to do that, because I can read this stuff and somewhat comprehend it. But, you know, they spoke differently back then. They wrote differently back then. And if you've ever read anything George Washington said, he could do a paragraph without a break.
Oh, right.
Long.
Same with Madison. Yeah. I mean, these guys were run on sentence kings, you know, and people give me a hard time when I write a long paragraph with only two sentences anyway, or two or three. Okay. So we're on page 91, folks, the very end. And it says, and it starts off with a quotation that there is no bill or declaration of rights. So go, if you could, let's start off there.
Okay. Quote, that there is no bill or declaration of rights in this Constitution, end quote. To this I answer, such a thing has not been deemed essential to liberty, excepting in Great Britain, where there is a king and a House of Lords, quite distinct with respect to power and interest from the rest of the people, or in Poland, the Pacta Conventus, which the king signs before he is crowned, and in six states of the American United States. What is it? Hang on a minute, GR.
Sure.
Forgive me, but what is he talking about here? That there's something called the Pacta Conventus in six of the U.S. states?
Oh, no. Okay, so in Poland, the Pacta Conventus, which the king signs before he is crowned. In other words, he is signing a document before he becomes the king, a legal document that constrains him. See, a lot of this stuff is common knowledge, and there he's exposing something of how Poland was operating back in those days that most of the men that were educated that are in these conventions have the same knowledge. So it's kind of, I don't want to call it jargon, but they're talking about and referencing, you know, current ways of doing government that were, you know, just common practice that most people knew about. Now, the next part, because there's a semicolon, and in six states of the United States. In other words, in six of the states, there is a restriction placed upon the governors of those states to, you know, that they can't, you know, they don't have general powers. And so, because they're talking about the whole purpose was about a declaration of rights that, you know, these rights are reserved and everybody's complaining. But actually, under this Constitution, it's an enumerated Constitution. There was no need for a Bill of Rights. And that was the prevailing argument. And it got ratified based on that. And he was only pointing out that there were other conditions where, because in England, the king had, you know, all of these general powers, and it was necessary to have a Bill of Rights. Under ours, we have an enumeration, but in other states, you know, in the United States or that back then, and in Poland, there are governors that sign this agreement that, you know, they are going to be reserved in, you know, in how they govern, in how they're going to rule their people. That's what the Pacta Conventus, if you look it up in Poland's Pacta Conventus, you'll probably find that it was a compact or an agreement that the king would sign before he would become the king in ruling the people of Poland. Anyway,
what I remember is that putting this in context, he was referring to a Bill of Rights, and then he's referring to six states that, you know, so you. It was necessary. They had it in England. They had it in Poland. And by the way, six of the American United States have a Bill of Rights.
Right.
And so when I remember the context, then I was aligned. It just threw me for a minute.
So he's kind of laying out the beginning of his argument, and then he continues on with these next paragraphs. So these will kind of help answer it as well, because let him continue by going and again, because it is unnecessary. Go ahead.
Okay. And again, because it is unnecessary for the powers of Congress being derived from the people in the mode pointed out by this Constitution and being therein enumerated and positively granted can be no other than what this positive grant conveys.
Right. And here he cites, folks, Locke, you know, and very specific volumes of Locke. Go ahead with the delegated.
With respect to executive officers, they have no manner of authority, any of them, beyond what is by positive grant and commission delegated to them. Quote, that this is a consolidation of the several states and not a confederation, end quote. To this I answer, the name is immaterial. The thing unites the several states and makes them like one, in particular instances and for particular purposes, which is what is ardently desired by most of the sensible men in this country. I care not whether it is called a consolidation, confederation, or national government, or by what other name. If it is a good government and calculated to promote the blessings of liberty, tranquility, and happiness.
Okay, so here's a good part to kind of interject, because we've talked about this, and I've written some things, and you've read this actually in my what I have given you so far regarding my article on the First Amendment right of petition. And back in these days, they didn't use or were not familiar with the word hybrid. But okay, our government is a hybrid. And this is why it was so confusing so to so many people. They're calling it a consolidation, but it's not. It's a confederation, but it's not. And actually, it is more of a confederation than it is a federation. And so anyway, and most people they don't recognize, you know, what is this government? Is it a consolidation, a national government, a confederation? What is it? And so, okay, so go on. And then the next assertion is it's an aristocracy. So they keep on going on and trying to create these, you know, they're trying to get their arms around what this government is and trying to create these labels, because back in those days, just like today, they use label lynching, because the word aristocracy or, you know, democracy and those types of things were fighting words almost. They were bad words. So
they were considered swear words.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Okay. So in quotes, what he does, he repeats these arguments and then he answers them. So here's the next one. Quote, it is an aristocracy and was intended to be so by the framers of it, end quote. Here again, sir, the name is immaterial. If it is a good system of government for the general and common concerns of the United States. But after the definition which has already been given of an aristocratic government, it becomes unnecessary to repeat arguments to prove that this system does not establish an aristocracy. There have been some other small objections to, or rather criticisms on this work, which I rest assured the gentleman who made them will, on reflection, excuse me in omitting to notice. Many parts of this Constitution have been wrested and tortured in order to make way for shadowy objections, which must have been observed by every auditor. Some other things were said with acrimony. They seemed to be personal. I heard the sound, but it was inarticulate. I can compare it to nothing better than a feeble noise occasioned by the working. I'm sorry, GR. Let me read the sentence.
No. As a matter of fact, just so you know, you didn't know this, I wanted to read this whole paragraph, this short little paragraph, over again, because he's really pointing out how trivial and how trite these men were trying, these anti-federalists were trying to create this negative, you know, paradigm. This imagery that they were trying to use was just, grow up, guys. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying here. But I mean, go ahead and read the whole paragraph over. And then, you know, just kind of take a pause, because, and I'll read the first part. Many parts of this Constitution have been wrested and tortured. And when it says wrested, that's with a W. In other words, like wrestled. And so they wrestled with and they tortured over going through this Constitution. This is not something that was just lightly done. And so he goes, in order to make way for shadowy objections, which have been observed by every auditor. In other words, they're talking about, you know, and this is really more laying towards these critics that are out there, and they're creating these shadowy objections, which must have been observed by everybody that's been reading this and and paying attention, you know, that there are some critics here that are, you know, lacking some scruples. And he's calling them out here. And he says, some other things were said with acrimony. They seemed to be personal. I heard the sound, but it was inarticulate. In other words, he really couldn't make sense of it. But, yeah, I mean, it was just like one of those really, you could just tell by the demeanor, the tone of the voice, that it was just a snide comment under the breath or what have you. And then he says, I compare it to nothing better than the feeble noise occasioned by the working of small beer. In other words, a drunken man.
Right. I had, as I was looking at this ahead before I got to the end of the sentence, it just amused me. And I apologize.
It's okay. It's okay because this is an insight of what they were dealing with in the ratification debates with these people who were opposing it. And I keep going out and helping people because, you know, folks, if you see anybody in social media or anybody in public or whatever, make an assertion that the anti-federalists were right. You are now listening to a person that believed in the lies that these powers, you know, were that have been assumed are legitimate. Because the Federalists clearly pointed out that every assertion that the anti-Federalists were making, that they would do these things, were clearly pointing out that they couldn't do those things, that those would be violations.
Right.
And so the anti-Federalists weren't the heroes. These weren't men that were really trying to actually have a good objective argument. They had their own motives. They were trying to protect the cabal. And so when people try to glorify these anti-Federalists in the Patriot movement, they are doing us a disservice. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that any stronger. I think that any person that has been making those types of charges that the anti-Federalists were right, then they have actually gone in league with the devil, because it was the devil that was trying to keep this thing from being ratified. And because the people at this point in time in the history of, you know, mankind, and as they formed enlightenment and formed, you know, this new government, that the divine hand of providence inspired these men, and it was working through all these men. That's why the Constitution was unanimously passed by all of the states that actually debated it. The only state that didn't was Rhode Island, and they did it begrudgingly.
You're right. Okay.
So
there's one more sentence here.
Sure.
I think on this page. Let me. Well, actually, there are more, but I haven't heard a break, so I'm going to hurry up. Okay.
Sure.
It holds in argument as well as nature that destructio unius est generatio ulterioris. The refutation of an argument begets a proof. Okay.
And then he goes on and says, the objections to this Constitution have been answered and all done away. It remains pure and unhurt. And this alone is a forcible argument of its goodness. Go ahead and pick up there.
Mr. President, I am sure nothing can prevail with me to give my vote for ratifying this Constitution but a conviction from comparing the arguments on both sides that the not doing it is liable to more inconvenience and danger than the doing it. One, if you do it, you strengthen the government and people of these United States and will thereby save the wisdom and assistance of all the states. Two, you will settle, establish, and firmly perpetuate our independence by destroying the vain hopes of all its enemies, both at home and abroad. Three, you will encourage your allies to join with you, nay, to depend that what hath been stipulated or shall hereafter be stipulated and agreed upon will be punctually performed, and other nations will be induced to enter into treaties with you. Four, it will have a tendency to break our parties and divisions, and by that means lay a firm and solid foundation for the future tranquility and happiness of the United States in general, and of this state in particular. 5, it will invigorate our commerce and encourage shipbuilding. 6, it will have a tendency not only to prevent any other nation from making war upon you, but from offering you any wrong or even insult. In short, the advantages that must result from it are obviously so numerous and important, and have been so fully and ably pointed out by others, that it appears to be unnecessary to enlarge on this head. Upon the whole, sir, the law has been my study from my infancy and my only profession. I have gone through the circle of offices in the legislative, executive, and judicial departments of government. And from all my study, observation, and experience, I must declare that from a full examination and due consideration of this system, it appears to me to be the best the world has yet seen. I congratulate you on the fair prospect of its being adopted, and I'm happy in the expectation of seeing accomplished what has been long my ardent wish, that you will hereafter have a salutary permanency in magistracy and stability in the laws.
Wow. So, the paragraph before, the very last line, it appears to me the best the world has yet seen. And wow. I mean, that's bold, but I mean, look today. It is still, by hands down, head and shoulders, it is the best. And as a matter of fact, this is, I go painstakingly proving that this is God's plan. Our Constitution was God's plan of globalism under the form of liberty, you know, how he planned on us, all of his children. I mean, are we not, every human being on this earth, are we not all his children? Why would he not? I mean, I point out to these people that say only America can have liberty. You know, it's like we have the only birthright. And I go, are you telling me that our God in heaven, our creator, only wants the people that live in this geographical region to have the liberty to worship him? Doesn't he want all of his children to worship him and have the liberty to make their own choices that this government provides? I'm just going, I'm in awe when I hear such stupefying idiocracy.
Right.
It's the imbecility of sometimes when people just start saying things that, you know, that this nation was created for, you know, a righteous and just. God created a government for all people that, you know, given them the liberty to choose for themselves. You know, I have to point out, you know, because we're coming close to, you know, Easter and all of that. You know, did Christ, create a doctrine that we needed to force all men into salvation? Did he tell the adulteress to, you know, bind thyself so thou shalt never be able to sin again? Or did he give her and point out that she has the agency, go and sin no more?
Right.
We all have this responsibility to help people make the best decisions for themselves. This is a responsibility as a Christian. But we, you know, these people that say, you know, we have to force, I mean, the paradigm is that it, you know, this nation can only be, you know, had by righteous people. Well, did not Christ go into the dens of iniquity to help those who needed to be healed from their sin and wickedness? Yes, that's the whole point of liberty. You can't do that when government doesn't allow you. We've actually had a government in America that has constrained religious abilities to be able to heal people. We're still fighting and dealing with this oppression. We're going into break real quick, but I'll pick this back up on the other side of the break because I don't have enough time. But the fact of the matter is, folks, when we see these states and all of these other, you know, countries in America, as America is making laws that keep us from being able to undo the perversions of children, such as the therapies and stopping children from being. We'll pick this right up after this break. We'll be right back. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so some of the laws that we see, and I talk about this all the time, that are protecting people from the consequences of sin. In other words, when government goes out of the way to remove the consequences of sin, all they're doing is enabling people to continue in their sin instead of basically, saying, because there's nothing better than the deterrent for not committing sin when you actually have to deal with the consequences, these unwanted pregnancies, these, venereal disease, those types of things. Why would we be going out of our way of curing those things? Not that we want people to necessarily suffer, but there are consequences, and that's what happens. And government shouldn't be spending billions and trillions of dollars in removing the consequences of sin. And the fact that we see today that our government has created constraints for parents not being able to inject, not even be able to know what's going into their kids' heads as they pervert them and basically get these kids to be willing to actually do something so evil as to change their gender and become a pervert and a tool, to be objectified by other people, to be sexually abused and so forth. It makes no sense. Paul, help me out here. I mean, we have gone so dark and so evil, and I know that the only way we can actually have, a defense against this system is the ability, first off, to talk, have liberty, and be able to communicate these ideas, and actually with the system that government cannot do things that aren't enumerated. In other words, our government is constrained from being able to do these things, and everything that they are doing and all of this warfare, whether it be the sexual, this immoral crap, or whether it be these other things, the globalists, the World Economic Forum, it's all unconstitutional because they have no authority to do these things. You can't tell me that this government only belongs here in America. This government belongs worldwide.
Well, that's a concept, GR, that I got from you that was eye-opening. Instead of us using this term, promoting the democracy at the point of a gun, what we would do, let's suppose we cleaned up our own house and that we had liberty here, and then we invite other nations. I mean, think Canada. I mean, I'm hurting for a lot of Canadians right now, okay? Right. But we invite other nations and provinces to join our free system of government. When I say we need to clean up our own house, we need to address those things that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. We need to address the violations on the liberties of the people and the violations of public servants against their oath. We need to address those. And then as we clean our house, we need to say, we've got liberty. You can have it too. And maybe we can invite Taiwan.
Right.
Okay. To take a liberty, or even the African nations. Now, and I'm just saying that's an opportunity. Instead of having us forcibly having, you know, we've got military all over the planet. I think we're in 190 countries. What's up with that? So how many
countries do we have trade with?
I don't know how to answer. I could look that up.
I think we have trade. I mean, if we trade with the most evil countries, I think we trade with every country. And the whole point of projecting force was to protect our commerce. That's it. We were to protect our commerce so that it could flow freely because we believed in free trade and not to allow, you know, the Ottoman Empire to take our trade or our commerce hostage, you know. So that was the whole point of having a worldwide force. Now, the problem is that the whole world has been enjoying using our protecting our own commerce. And they've been, you know, basically freely trading under our cost. And so had we actually moved and actually grew the Constitutional Republic to include all states that wanted to have liberty. But see, you got to understand that we need, you know, as long as we have factions, as long as we have oppositions, we can, you know, move things and manipulate things into the direction we want to. And the evil people, the design is control. That was the design years and years and years ago before our Constitution was even formed.
Well, then when you put it that way, imagine this. Okay, if we've got our military to protect our commerce, and I can see that, okay, then guess what? Then China's following our example. Imagine this. They're putting police stations in countries all over the world. I've heard they even have one in New York. What's up with that? Well, what are they doing? They're protecting what they think is their commerce. And so what we need to do is rein in the tyranny that's happening because we are violating the Constitution or allowing it to be violated.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday, that the process, you know, the only way to do that is for the body to function the way it's designed, that we, the people, the cells of this government, have to hold our public servants accountable. And our government accountable. We have all of the power given us. There's no country in the world that has this type of power to remove somebody for violating their oath and not. In those countries, they have to support the elected class. In America, we have to support the Constitution. Public servants have to support the. It is about the Constitution, not who got elected.
Right.
Right.
Correct. And we're kind of, I guess the other comment I have is that, you know, if we come to the Constitution, we don't have to be divided or deceived by hero worship.
That's right.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, so bottom line, you know, people put so much on a president to say, oh, he doesn't have the authority to do it all. His only responsibility is to ensure that the Constitution is being faithfully executed and the laws in pursuant to it. But the problem is we have yet to have a president in over centuries that has said, I must be constrained. And then this is why I said prior to Trump getting elected and during his period of service, that his job is to go out to the states and say, I can't fix it, only you can do this. I mean, I go on and on about what a true leader would do. And this is why, as we're heading into the 2024 election, I'm kind of laying out this argument, folks. This is what we need to be looking for in our president. Mm-hmm. You know, vote for me. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm going to lay out what the foreign policy plan is and what the plan forward is to actually break up this rule, this tyrannical rule and Leviathan that has been created by the globalists to actually destroy us, because it is all done to destroy us. and they're going to take these unconstitutional vestiges from the EPA and all of these other, these ideologues that have been created in these destructive powers to actually continue using those things to drive their agenda in controlling and killing off most of the world. Because it's been clearly articulated. There are way too many people alive. We need to get rid of many of you.
And so, they come right out and said it.
Yeah, they have. Absolutely. The Georgia Guidestones basically lay it out. No more than a half a billion people are should be allowed to live on this earth. Now, let me get back to the Pennsylvania, because we're wrapping up here. And so what we don't read and we haven't gotten into is that they get to this point where they start making amendment recommendations. Now, in Massachusetts kind of gets this lauded, oh, well, look at what Massachusetts did. Actually, Pennsylvania did it. And so when the Constitution was heavily contested, they went ahead and ratified, but they also submitted what they would like to see as amendments to the Constitution. And so when, Massachusetts ratified, they didn't stipulate, well, we'll ratify if you'd give us these amendments. Everybody just ratified and then provided what the amendments were. This is why when we get into the Bill of Rights and the new, newly formed Congress, how important it was for Madison to do exactly what he did. And you'll be surprised the kind of resistance that he got. And we'll get into that content down the road when we talk about the Bill of Rights, which is going to be following up after the ratification debates. But anyway, so now we talk about the amendments. And so if we go down to, and I think we're on page, what page is this? This is page 94.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Here's starting list of amendments.
Right.
The ratification of the federal constitution having formed a new era in the American world, highly interesting to all the citizens of the United States, it is not less the duty than the privilege of every citizen to examine with attention the principles and probable effect of a system on which the happiness or misery of the present as well as future generations so much depends. In the course of such examination, many of the good citizens of the state of Pennsylvania have found their apprehensions excited that the Constitution in its present form contains in it some principles which may be perverted to purposes injurious to the rights of free citizens, and some ambiguities which may probably lead to contentions incompatible with order and good government. In order to remedy these inconveniences and to avert the apprehended dangers, it has been thought expedient that delegates chosen by those who wish for early amendments in the said Constitution should meet together for the purpose of deliberating on the subject and uniting on some constitutional plan for obtaining the amendments which they may deem necessary. We, the conferees assembled for the purpose of the aforesaid, agree in opinion that a federal government only can preserve the liberties and secure the happiness of the inhabitants of a country so extensive as these United States, and experience having taught us that the ties of our union under the Articles of Confederation were so weak as to deprive us of some of the greatest advantages we had a right to expect from it. We are fully convinced that a more efficient government is indispensably necessary. But although the Constitution proposed for the United States is likely to obviate most of the inconveniences we labored under, yet several parts of it appear so exceptionable to us that we are clearly of opinion considerable amendments are essentially necessary. In full confidence, however, of obtaining a revision of such exceptional parts by general convention and from a desire to harmonize with our fellow citizens, we are induced to acquiesce in the organization of the said Constitution. We are sensible that a large number of citizens, both of this and the other states, who give their assent to its being carried into execution previous to any amendments, were actuated more by fear of the dangers that might arise from delays than by a conviction of its being perfect. We therefore hope they will concur with us in pursuing every peaceable method of obtaining a speedy revision of the Constitution in the mode therein provided. And when we reflect on the present circumstances of the Union, we can entertain no doubt that motives of conciliation and the dictates of policy and prudence will conspire to induce every man of true federal principles to give his support to a measure which is not only calculated to recommend the new Constitution to the approbation and support of every class of citizens, but even necessary to prevent the total defection of some members of the Union. Strongly impressed with these sentiments, we have agreed to the following resolutions. One, resolved that it be recommended to the people of this state to acquiesce in the organization of the said government. But although we thus accord in its organization, we by no means lose sight of the grand object of obtaining very considerable amendments and alterations which we consider essential to preserve the peace and harmony of the Union and those valuable privileges for which so much blood and treasure have been recently expended. Two, resolved that it is necessary to obtain a speedy revision of said Constitution by a general convention. Three, resolved that in order to effect this desirable end, a petition be presented to the legislature of this state, requesting that honorable body to take the earliest opportunity to make application for that purpose to the new Congress. The petition proposed is as follows. To the honorable, the representatives of the freemen of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania in General Assembly met. The petition and representation of the subscribers humbly show that our petitioners possess sentiments completely federal, being convinced that a confederacy of Republican states and no other can secure political liberty, happiness, and safety. Throughout a territory so extended as the United States of America, they are well apprised of the necessity of devolving extensive powers to Congress and of vesting the Supreme Legislature with every power and resource of a general nature, and consequently, they acquiesce in the general system of government framed by the late Federal Convention. In full confidence, however, that the same will be revised without delay, for however worthy of approbation the general principles and outlines of the system may be, your petitioners conceive that amendments in some parts of the plan are essential not only to the preservation of such rights and privileges as ought to be reserved in the respective states and in the citizens thereof, but to the fair and unembarrassed operation of the government in its various departments. And as provision is made in the Constitution itself for the making such amendments as may be deemed necessary, and your petitioners are desirous of obtaining the amendments which occur to them as more immediately desirable and necessary in the mode admitted by such provision, they pray that your honorable house, as the representatives of the people of this Commonwealth, will, in the course of your present session, take such measures as you, in your wisdom, shall deem most effectual and proper to obtain a revision and amendment of the Constitution of the United States, in such parts and in such manner as have been or shall be pointed out by the conventions or assemblies of the respective states, and that such revision be by a general convention of representatives from the several states in the Union.
Interesting. Yes. Okay, so go ahead and read this last paragraph, and then we'll talk about what you just read. Go ahead.
Okay. Your petitioners consider the amendments pointed out in the propositions hereunto subjoined as essentially necessary, and as such they suggest them to your notice, submitting to your wisdom the order in which they shall be presented to the consideration of the United States.
Okay, so obviously there was a petition that was being done by a subcommittee, because they, in the very beginning of the Pennsylvania debates, they created some subcommittees. And when we get to the Massachusetts debates, we're actually going to cover some of the administrative stuff at the very front end of what and how they conducted, because you'll notice that they actually were in session for a week and they only talked about, you know, certain things, you know, that they did on this given day and so forth. So in other words, they didn't document everything.
Okay.
But here we had a subcommittee that came forth, and what did they do but create a petition for a convention to amend the Constitution. In other words, they were basically not understanding the language. They were requesting an Article 5 convention. Is that not true here?
That's what it sounds like.
Absolutely, because that's what they're saying, that the revision and amendment of the this is the last part of the big paragraph you just read, amendment of the Constitution of the United States in such parts and in such a manner as to have shall have been appointed out by the conventions or assemblies of the respective states, and such revision be by a general convention of representatives from the several states in the Union. So that means a constitutional convention. Right. So in other words, they already had this desire to have an Article 5 convention to revise parts of the Constitution. Why is this important? Because when we get to the Bill of Rights, you know, there only two states actually get their petitions into Congress before Madison finally and a few other people convince Congress, who did not want to do anything. They actually just wanted to kick the tires on this government and let it go for a few years. And most people know that New York and Virginia were the first two states to apply. I'm just sitting here telling you folks that these other states, I think Pennsylvania was ready. They already had this resolution to petition. They just didn't get it there in time. And so how many other states would have quickly probably applied to where they probably would have had their two-thirds, especially when they saw how Congress wanted to basically not do anything regarding the cries from the states of amending this Constitution.
Right.
And so how, you know, when we get into this, you're going to find it's just absolutely fascinating how as soon as a person gets elected, how they disjoin themselves from who just elected them to this trough of power that they can get drunk on. Anyway, so the next part here is basically the proposed amendments, and this is where they start amending jurisdictions and so forth. And I think it's really important that we cover these things. We only got 5 minutes, so we won't get through all of these. But I think it's important because Pennsylvania was the first convention. This actually ratified the Constitution in December of 1787. They were the first to actually meet. I mean, where was the convention, the Constitution? It was right there in Pennsylvania. So yeah. they got the stuff right off the press. It didn't have to travel and then get disseminated and processed and all of that other stuff. That's why they were the first one out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's more people need to recognize Pennsylvania really did play a key role in setting the tone and so forth, but Massachusetts got clearly the credit for it. And I think that was probably more because of the Puritans and the diversity the difference of the Puritans compared to the Pennsylvanian, you know, Dutch, Amish, Germans, and all the people that were in Pennsylvania. They, you know, it was truly a homogenized state, right?
What, Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Yeah, more so, I think, than Massachusetts.
Heterogeneous. In other words, it was very mixed. Right. Where the New England states were very homogeneous. They were very singular. Each of the states up there had one religion, had one paradigm, and they all thought the same, where Pennsylvania had a lot of diversity. Anyway, okay, I hate using the word diversity, but okay, yeah. So let's go ahead and start off with the first amendment that they've got there regarding jurisdiction amendment.
Okay, one, the Congress shall not exercise any powers whatever but such as are expressly given to that body by the Constitution of the United States. Nor shall any authority, power, or jurisdiction be assumed or exercised by the executive or judiciary departments of the Union under color or pretense of construction or fiction, but all the rights of sovereignty which are not by the said Constitution expressly and plainly vested in the Congress shall be deemed to remain with and shall be exercised by the several states in the Union according to their respective constitutions, and that every reserve of the rights of individuals made by the several constitutions of the states of the Union to the citizens and inhabitants of each state respectively shall remain inviolate except so far as they're expressly and manifestly yielded or narrowed by the national constitution.
Okay, so in some of these amendments, they're kind of like stating the obvious that, hey, you know, you're given these powers and these are the only powers you're given. Right. I mean, it's like, OK, you're just basically trying to say the same thing again. And, you know, the framers were really the men that did this Constitution did a really good job in being very concise by putting it onto the four pages that they did. And these were big pages, by the way. But here's an interesting thing. This next amendment is about apportionment. So what's this next one?
Number two. That the number of representatives be for the present one for every 20,000 inhabitants, according to the present estimated numbers in the several states, and continue in that proportion until the whole number of representatives shall amount to 200, and then to be so proportioned and modified as not to exceed that number until the proportion of one representative for every 30,000 inhabitants shall amount to the said number of 200.
Now, stopping there, does this amendment sound familiar?
And of course it does.
So, in other words, this wasn't just Madison's idea, but Madison and Pennsylvania understanding that it required an amendment to change the representation of people per representative. That it requires, I mean, here's a whole state that created this one amendment that would have reduced representation and then slowly increased it, where Madison just started with the 30. If you read the very first amendment to the Bill of Rights, this is what this is. And clearly, they all acknowledge that the only way the number of representation could be done is by an amendment. And today, folks, they're deciding on their own how you are going to be represented instead of following the law. And in other words, if you go back to that first amendment, they've created the color of law, and they've literally created a house of cards, and they're operating and functioning within a house of cards that we can blow down.
Wait, what do you mean by they created a house of cards?
Well, so if you go into the very first amendment, which I say is really talking about stating the obvious, that when it says here, and this is that Congress shall not exercise any powers, whatever, but such as are expressly given to that body by the Constitution. Nor shall any authority, power, or jurisdiction be assumed. Now, we just ran out of time, and you can't hear this, but, you know, the music is playing. So when we come back, and actually, I'll see if I can have you back for Tuesday. That would be great if we could actually do a Tuesday show with you, Paul, so we could dive right into this, because you're asking a question. I want to be able to get back to you on this. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review, so please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty.